Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent, a programme that will address the most important issues in the South Asian region, which affect the governments, organisation, and especially the people. And as always, we will dissect the issues and present you with different perspectives from experts and people. So, stay tuned.
In this special edition of The Subcontinent, we will discuss ways in which the Islamic Revolution, spearheaded by Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, echoed far and wide, including in the Himalayan region of Kashmir. And we shall also delve into the tremendous impact of the 1979 revolution in neighboring Afghanistan and Pakistan and India.
Soon after the pro-West regime in Iran was toppled through a popular social-political movement in 1979, the founder of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, declared that the revolution will challenge the arrogant powers across the world. The idea was incorporated in the country's constitution, affirming Iran's support for the oppressed against the oppressors. It later gave shape to a revolutionary movement that took the Islamic world by storm, including the South Asian region.
What began as a popular nationwide uprising against the hideous plot to westernize Iran later transformed into a global movement against despotism, tyranny, and hegemonic schemes of arrogant powers. Nations took inspiration from Imam Khomeini's spirited resistance to free his country from the clutches of foreign powers. Over the past four decades, the movement has gripped the hearts and minds of people everywhere. Among the regions greatly influenced by the Islamic Revolution is the picturesque Himalayan region of Kashmir, a contested Muslim-majority territory ravaged by decades of conflict. This abode of Sufis and saints, which embraced Islam in the 14th century at the hands of Iranian missionaries like Mir Sayyid Ali Hamadani, adopted Imam Khomeini's revolution in letter and spirit. Since 1979, pro-resistance groups in the region have used Iran's Islamic Revolution as a powerful mechanism to mobilize masses against forces that perpetuate injustices and snatch people's fundamental rights.
In the whole subcontinent, Islamic Revolution of Iran, especially the struggle of great people like Imam Khomeini and all those people, Shahid Mutahhari and Ayatollah Abdul Hussein Dastagheib. We have long list of everybody who participated and supported Imam. There are more Islamic seminaries. There are more religious awareness. More people are turning away from the secularism and going towards the religious schools and preparing their sons and daughters and their next generation to understand Islam, especially the teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, more deeply. And there is a great awareness among the people which would never have been possible without this great revolution that is not only just from the social point of view, but also from the political and religious point of view.
The appeal of Imam Khomeini's resistance manual cuts across the sectarian lines, with both Shias and Sunnis crediting him for reinvigorating their struggle for freedom from oppression, subjugation, and occupation. Today, the biggest rallies to mark the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution outside Iran are held in the cities of Srinagar and Kargil. Streets in both the cities are dotted with pictures and banners, paying tribute to Imam Khomeini and his intrepid companions.
Islamic Revolution of Iran has an impact on hearts and minds of Kashmiris over the past few decades. And you know, I believe it still lives in our hearts as a society and community. Now, I also believe that it has harnessed our inner belief to rise above the basic evil thought process of sectarian divide and how to revolutionize and evolve or stand for communal harmony on humanitarian grids.
Be it Yemen, Syria, Palestine, or the Valley of Kashmir, the Islamic Revolution in Iran has set up an example for all the people living in chaotic and politically unstable regions. It not only inspires us to be strong while we are at the verge of losing hope, but also teaches us the responsibilities that we should bear so that we can together overthrow the oppressive powers and walk the path of justice.
The wave of the Islamic revival, fueled by the 1979 Islamic Revolution, has engulfed the entire region. To invoke the Islamic Revolution, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, said it's akin to the scent of spring flowers carried by the breeze to different corners of the Islamic world. In Kashmir, the scent seems to feel more strongly, partly because of Imam Khomeini's deep and personal affiliation with the region. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has also followed the same roadmap on what is known today as the world's most militarized zone.
When Imam Khomeini, during his exile in France, was asked by a French journalist where he would prefer to go if his asylum was revoked, his answer was Kashmir. His choice wasn't anything strange. Earlier, while in Iraq, he had exchanged a series of letters with the then top Shia cleric in Kashmir, Sayyid Yusuf Musavi, who had invited him to Kashmir. The unshakable allegiance of Kashmiris to the ideals of Islamic revolution has to be seen in the context of the advocacy of their long-standing political struggle by both Imam Khomeini and his worthy successor. Imam Khomeini, way back in 1965, during a speech in Najaf, had equated Kashmir with Palestine. Imam Khomeini, known for his plain speech, has often emphasized the just struggle of Palestinians and Kashmiris.
Islamic revolution is the hope for the people, oppressed people across the world. Islamic revolution is one of the important historical incidents of the 20th century. We cannot ignore this because of this that caused many historic events and social and political changes across the world. In our region, in Jammu, Kashmir and Ladakh, we have seen so many, many modernist reforms that people have become very conscious. They are inspired from Islamic revolution and ideology of Imam Khomeini.
People in the Himalayan region, most notably Srinagar and Kargil, today draw spiritual and resistance leadership from Iran. They celebrate the triumph of the Islamic Revolution and mourn the martyrs of the Holy Defense. They burn the effigies of Trump and Pompeo and hold memorials for Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. This is the miracle of Imam Khomeini and his revolutionary legacy.
The influence of the Islamic Revolution has over the years extended far and wide, leaving virtually no part of the subcontinent untouched. In Muslim-majority Pakistan, the wave of the 1979 revolution, spearheaded by Imam Khomeini, enveloped the country in the early 1980s as a response to Takfiri extremism. People saw it as a revolutionary movement aimed at Islamic revival. More than four decades later, a vast majority of Muslims in the South Asian country are vocal adherents of the Imam Khomeini School of Resistance.
Under Pakistan's former military dictator, Ziaul Haq, a deeply sinister project of Islamization was unleashed, which essentially used Islam as an instrument to consolidate his political power. In contrast, the Islamic Revolution came with a purpose and attracted many followers. Soon after the Islamic Revolution in 1979, under the spiritual leadership of Imam Khomeini, Pakistani Shias came together for the first time to form Tehrik-e-Jafariya Pakistan. The spread of the Islamic Revolution in Pakistan coincided with the rise of Wahhabi Takfirism, bankrolled by Arab regimes, which in turn led to killings of many prominent Shia leaders like Allama Arif Hosseini. Known as Khomeini Pakistan, Martyr Arif Hosseini was the founder of Tehrik-e-Jafariya. The violence, however, did not deter the leadership.
Martyrdom of Arif Hosseini was definitely the result of Pakistani support to Islamic revolution. And the state very much, had to do a lot of struggle to find out the culprits, but We know that there have been many other, you know, successive assassinations of prominent Shia denomination leadership in Pakistan. It was only because of the tension between the powers and activists between the supporters of Islamic Revolution and the opponents of or the people who are somehow still this tension is still prevailing there, but the religious awareness, the struggle against the resistance, and the voice of the oppressed people. For example, the resistance against Israel and the support for Palestinians became very stronger.
Many social and political groups came into being over the years inspired by the Islamic Revolution. Today, many leading political organizations in Pakistan owe their existence to the same revolution. Majlis-e-Wahdat-e-Muslimin, founded in 2009, indefatigably espouses the political cause of minorities in Pakistan. Most of its leaders are drawn from the Imamia Students Organization, one of the largest student organizations in the country, with 800 branches and almost 26,000 members. ISO's activities are inspired by the Islamic Revolution and Imam Khomeini. Many of its members have been martyred in recent years, fighting Daesh under the banner of Zainabiyun.
Although successive governments in New Delhi reluctantly embraced the Islamic Republic after 1979, Muslims in the Hindu-majority country were also exposed to the currents of the Islamic Revolution. Since the country boasts of around 200 million Muslims, the ruling elites in New Delhi have long chosen to tread cautiously. With the BJP in power, things appear to be changing now. On the other side, the Islamic Revolution has had deepest sway in neighboring Afghanistan, where many top Afghan leaders across the ideological spectrum have taken inspiration from Imam Khomeini.
India is home to the second largest Muslim population in the world after Indonesia. The country also has the second most Shia concentration in the world after Iran. Indian Muslims in general and Indian Shias in particular have been known for deep ideological and religious ties with the Islamic Republic, even though their patriotism has never been in question. The ideals of the Islamic Revolution have a large audience in the country, which is evident in massive pro-Iran demonstrations. On International Quds Day, for instance, large rallies are held in big cities like New Delhi, Mumbai, Hyderabad, and Lucknow. On Iranian anti-terror commander General Qasem Soleimani's assassination 2 years ago, thousands of people took to the streets across India to reaffirm their support for the resistance axis.
The Islamic Revolution of 1979 gave an international identity to the Muslims of India and the subcontinent, especially the Shias. People still idolized many Iranians in all walks of their life. For example, in the CAA protests, where students were lathi-charged by the police. A group of students resorted to giving red roses to the policemen, which is an inspiration from what Imam Khomeini had ordered the Iranians to do during the Islamic Revolution of 1979.
Islamic Revolution led by Imam Khomeini not only changed the mindset of people regarding politics, but also changed the beliefs of people regarding religion. It taught us that we should not keep politics away from religion.
In Afghanistan, the erstwhile Hizb-e-Wahdat-e-Islami, founded by the late Hazara leader Abdul Ali Mazari, was the outcome of efforts made by the Islamic Revolution ideologues. Mazari had close ties with Imam Khomeini. His successors, Karim Khalili and Muhammad Muhaqqiq, later maintained those ties, although the organization became a shadow of its past following the killing of Mazari in 1995. The influence of the Islamic Revolution in Afghanistan also saw thousands of youths defending the holy shrines from Daesh terrorists in Syria under the banner of Fatemiyun Brigade. The victory against the terrorist group was made possible by these valiant warriors.
Islamic Revolution of Iran has a huge contemporary significance. for the Muslim Ummah across the globe. It shows us, it gives us a hope that even in today's times, when everything has become so complex, with societies losing their basic fabric to illogical hijab bans or Islamophobia, if I may say, Islamophobia on an all-time high, nevertheless, the revolution has a direct impact on it for each of our lives. Every day we see stories that inspire us. We have people to look forward to, people who stand against injustice and trying to put into action the teachings of peace, brotherhood, justice, tolerance, and all this in the light of divine religion of Islam.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Now, to have more insight, we are joined by Sayyid Ruhullah Musavi, former minister and legislator of Kashmir. Welcome to the program, sir. Now, after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khomeini affirmed the Islamic Republic of Iran's support to the oppressed against the oppressors worldwide. Now, do you think this has helped the Islamic Revolution become a worldwide phenomenon?
Hello. Hello to you and your audience. Thanks for having me. The Islamic Revolution post-1979 became a worldwide phenomenon, especially the approach towards Israel issue, the Palestinian issue, the rights for Palestinian existence, which became the center of its worldview, and the way Iran, especially post-revolution, behaved in favor of the oppressed. Has helped the revolution spread across as a mean for those who were oppressed to get a voice. It gave voice to the oppressed who were not heard of as strongly as post-revolution. And you can see many such instances even today playing internationally, where we see people in Yemen and people in Iraq taking their strength from the principles of the Islamic Revolution, where the oppressed get strength and the voice is given to the oppressed and support is moral support is given to the oppressed. So all the events, world events, especially in Middle East from 1979 to this day, suggest that the Islamic Revolution became an instrument of a voice, instrument of strength. The oppressed people derived their moral strength from the Islamic Revolution, which reflects from the Palestinian issue and the issues in Middle East, so to speak, about Iraq and Yemen particularly.
Mr. Musavi, the movement aimed at Islamic revival, spearheaded by Imam Khomeini in the early 1980s, reverberated across the globe. Now, could you tell us more on its overall impact in Kashmir?
See, in Kashmir, the events have to be taken into context. The Islamic Revolution of Iran came in 1979, which was a very successful Islamic event. And soon after that, the Afghans took courage, and they derived the courage from this event. And we saw as a result of which, we saw the withdrawal of Soviet forces from Afghanistan. So in the course of a decade, we saw two superpowers, quote-unquote superpowers of that time, who had to withdraw from their interests, the countries of interest. In case of America, the Shah had to withdraw and leave the country. And in case of Afghanistan, the other superpower of the time, Soviet Union, had to leave the country and withdraw from that. So these events which took place, the Kashmiris also thought, the people in Kashmiri also took the courage and moral they identified with the strength of this ideology. And though it may not be from me as an subscriber to a particular thought, but as an observer, I am giving this answer. The people in Kashmir derived their strength from these two facts and thought that the voice they wanted to be heard can be heard, and they came out courageously after these events. And since that time to this time, Kashmiris have seen, as a matter of fact, the revolution of Iran a moral support, which gives them the courage to speak to the power, and they feel that they, while being oppressed of the circumstances, they have something to look up to, an ideology like Islamic Revolution that helped the people in Afghanistan to drive courage as well, and therefore the people in Kashmir drive the strength from this, where the oppressed is given the strength and the moral support from Iran.
So today we see the biggest rallies outside Iran on the anniversary of the Islamic Revolution in Kashmir in cities like Srinagar and Kargil. What social political factors would you attribute to it?
Again, this is the result of the success of Islamic Revolution in Iran and the success of the same moral support and moral ideology, if we may want to put it that way, that was identical that we saw against Soviet Union in Afghanistan. A culture of courage while being oppressed developed in Kashmir as well, because the political circumstances were such. The people in Kashmir identified themselves with the people of Iran and Afghanistan. So since that time, it has become a culture in Kashmir where the people drive this moral support from the events of past, and they identify themselves with this ideology, which began from Iran, came to Afghanistan, and the different parts of the world where the oppressors were voiceless, developed a culture of hope and resistance. One is that. The other thing is you have to take this into account. The faith plays a very important role when you see the processions, the amount of people coming on to celebrate the days of Islamic Republic, the anniversary of revolution. There's a particular element of faith, because post-revolution, the sections of the society, particularly in Kashmir, of sections of this faith were voiceless. They had some sort of an identity crisis vis-a-vis the world all over. After these events, they could identify themselves at the world stage. They could find themselves important part of at the world stage, identifying themselves with the Islamic Revolution. So this courage, this faith, and this political atmosphere, this all cultivated into an atmosphere. This grew up into an atmosphere where you see people coming out on streets to celebrate this anniversary or this ideology, both in terms of faith, also in terms of culture and moral support.
On that note, I would like to thank Mr. Ruhollah Mousavi for his precious time, knowledge, and insight. Now, let's see what people have been saying on social media.
Kashmir-based medical practitioner Dr. Abid Hussain cites a famous quote of the founder of the Islamic Revolution to stress that scholars must not justify the rule of barbaric, brutal regimes. Zulfaqar Ali, a seminary student from Kashmir, shares a picture from the International Quds Day rally in central Kashmir in which a Kashmiri child is seen trampling on the flag of the Zionist regime. A Twitter user shares a historic picture from 1980, 1 year after the Islamic Revolution, when Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei visited Kashmir. A Twitter user, Zahra Mousavi, pays tribute to martyr Muhammad Ali Naghvi, a leader of Pakistani Shias and a follower of Imam Khomeini, who played a key role in popularizing the Islamic Revolution in Pakistan. Lashan Wani, a Kashmir-based TV journalist, posts a clip of massive protests in Shia-majority Kargil city following the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani, with protesters chanting anti-US slogans.
And that was our special episode about the impact and influence of Iran's Islamic Revolution in the South Asian region. Thank you for your time, everyone. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take good care.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Sanctions currently imposed on Afghanistan are on track to take the lives of more civilians in the coming year than have been killed by 20 years of warfare. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Mark Weisbrot, writer. This article is published under the heading U.S. sanctions on Afghanistan could be deadlier than 20 years of war. Stay tuned for more. Economic sanctions have, in recent years, become one of the most important tools of U.S. foreign policy. There are currently more than 20 countries subjected to various sanctions from the U.S. government. But if more Americans knew how many innocent civilians actually die as a result of these sanctions, would the worst of them be permitted? Sanctions currently imposed on Afghanistan are on track to take the lives of more civilians in the coming year than have been killed by 20 years of warfare. There is no hiding it anymore. Projections through the winter estimate that 22.8 million people will face high levels of acute food insecurity. This is 55% of Afghanistan population, the highest ever recorded in the country. An estimated 1 million children are suffering from severe acute malnutrition this year in Afghanistan. Children who are malnourished are more likely to die from other diseases, even when they can't get enough calories and nutrients to survive. Already, 98% of the population is not getting enough food, according to the UN World Food Program. The biggest and most destructive sanction currently facing Afghanistan is the seizure of more than $7 billion of the country's assets that are held at the U.S. Federal Reserve. This is equivalent to about 40% of Afghanistan's economy and about 14 months of the country's imports, which include food, medicine, and infrastructure needs that are vital to public health. But the impact of this loss of central bank assets turns out to be much deadlier than the loss of essential imports. The assets confiscated are in dollars. Countries need these hard currency international reserves in order to maintain a stable financial system and economy. Since the freezing of the country's reserves, cash shortages and the loss of correspondent banking relationships have crippled Afghan banks, reports the International Monetary Fund, IMF. Press reports from the ground describe calamitous human costs of the disruption that results when these reserves are lost. Desperate mothers seeking medicine for emaciated children, soaring numbers of people going without income, farmers giving up on working their land. In the first 4 months following the sanctions, Afghanistan's currency depreciated by 30%, driving the price of food and other essentials beyond the reach of many people in what was already the poorest country in Asia. Banks imposed a $400 limit on cash withdrawals and also restrictions that make businesses unable to meet their payrolls. This pushes more people into unemployment and acute hunger. Supporters of sanctions in the U.S. government and elsewhere have responded that people who are starving, malnourished, or unemployed as a result of sanctions can be helped with international aid. However, it is clear that the logic of destroying an economy and then trying to save people with aid does not work. Aid will replace only a very small fraction of the country's loss of income, which the IMF estimates could fall by an astounding, unprecedented 30% in the month ahead. And there are enormous difficulties in delivering the aid. The banking system is hobbled. International banks and even some aid groups are reluctant to take the risks involved in transferring funds, and there are breakdowns in transport, as well as other essential services because of the sanctions and resultant economic construction. Western governments, led by the U.S., as during 20 years of war, are not likely to get any concessions from the Taliban by destroying the Afghan economy. But an enormous price will be paid by millions of innocent people, many of whom will die as food, healthcare, employment, and income become increasingly scarce. Members of the U.S. Congress are starting to push back. Four dozen sent a letter to Biden in December noting the U.S. confiscation of $9.4 billion in Afghanistan's currency reserves is plunging the country deeper into economic and humanitarian crisis. This collective punishment is righteously wrong and immoral. The Biden administration can remove the biggest contributing factor with the stroke of a pen. They should do so immediately before it is too late. Economic divide.
Iran's Islamic Revolution, a revolution like no other, to put an end to centuries of monarchy. And its new political system, which was the Islamic Republic, upended the economy for the rich to make an economy that works for everyone. And that was no small feat. Hi, I'm Kaveh Tahweh. In this edition of the program, we will look at the Islamic Republic through the economic lens. Coming up in today's program, a look at Iran's past and present, marking the birth of the Islamic Revolution through the economic lens, like infrastructure expansion to rural areas, which helped eliminate the rural-urban divide. We will also take a look at the expansion of health and education to the rural areas, major achievements for the Islamic Republic, how the successive Islamic governments contributed to it to lead to sharp poverty reduction. Obviously, that's something that we will look at length. And finally, we're going to take a look at how sanctions that were imposed by the West, in particular the U.S., led to indigenous manufacturing in Iran, products ranging from sectors like defense to automobile to other major fields like nuclear technology, aerospace, and medicine.
43 years ago, the Iranian nation managed to oust a dictatorial regime. The Pahlavi dictatorial dynasty was supported by the United States. The Pahlavi regime's economic policies, which were driven by windfall oil revenues and financial support from the U.S. and other Western nations, mainly benefited international companies and speculators. Ordinary people in the city outskirts and rural areas were mainly ignored. But following the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, Iranian leaders and newly established revolutionary institutions launched comprehensive programs to help the people and lift them out of poverty and despair. Iranian authorities also launched expansive programs to expand basic services to every citizen in the country. The expansion of basic services such as electricity and clean water accelerated in rural areas. By the year 2000, these services had become universal, and household amenities such as washing machines and air conditioners had expanded significantly. The expansion of health and education to rural areas sharply reduced poverty. The poverty rate fell to less than 10% in the year 2014. A comprehensive health program was initiated in rural areas to reduce infant and maternal mortality.
The IRGC's ground forces have been at the front for the building mobile hospitals. We have used these systems since 2010 in the deprived areas, especially Sistan and Balochistan province, and the southeast and northwest of the country. Today, we are launching one of the largest mobile hospitals after almost 11 years of experience in setting up mobile hospitals in different parts of the country.
It is widely believed that the Islamic Republic has been successful in the expansion of infrastructure for rural development. That has reduced poverty significantly.
When it comes to social media posts for this topic, we wanted to share with you the types of achievements and strides that Iran has made since the revolution. Now, this would be in the area of economic advancements, not only for the Islamic Republic, but for other countries across the globe. Like this social media post, which came from Ali Vargas. He said that Iran has played a key role in helping to rebuild Venezuela's economy. They've repaired oil refineries and adapted the technology to ensure that it's no longer dependent on replacement parts from the United States and from Europe. Now, a reminder of the U.S. shooting itself in the foot and Iran's valuable place that is absent from the world economy and the oil market. Now, Dmitry wrote, "Every $1 increase per barrel of oil equals $10 million extra per day to Russia, $2 million to Iran, $1 million to Venezuela. U.S. can restore energy independence, drive prices down to benefit Americans, and bankrupt adversary ambitions. Independence secures U.S. economy, and it also brings global economic stability." And then we have this tweet from Ahmad Habib with some awe-inspiring photos that you're about to see. He says, "Did you visit Iran? This is the metro in Iran. Their economy is self-sufficient. They produce cars, buses, trucks, jets, Navy battleships, etc., despite the embargo. Cuba produced its own COVID vaccine with 93% efficacy. You should update your info. The world is changing." All right, let's discuss this with our guest. Joining us in this segment is Dr. Ali Rezvanpour. He's an international affairs expert. And we also have Hamid Ghulamzadeh, a journalist, writer, and political commentator. Dr. Rezvanpour, welcome. I'll start with you. The 1979 Islamic Revolution brought with it lots of hope for Iranians across the board. And after the revolution, there was an expansion of basic services. That was something that was noted in things like electricity and water, especially when it came to rural areas. For a young country, it was apparent that the basic needs of people were actually given the attention that it needed. How critical was this for the advancement of the country, given that the attention was given to that sector?
In the name of God, the compassionate and the merciful. As stated in the question, the Islamic Republic of Iran triumph and also the Islamic Republic of Iran victory brought many hopes for Iranian people, especially those people who were depressed by the tyranny of Shah, the deposed Iran monarch. So after the revolution, we witnessed different kinds of, infrastructure were provided for remote areas of Iran and also remote areas in which people didn't have any access to basic needs like water and also electricity. So if you wanted to just conclude, the basic, improvement in Iranian infrastructure immediately after the revolution, we can refer to providing electricity and water for mostly needed people who are living in remote areas. By the victory of the Islamic Revolution, these basic needs were provided for these people, and also was mentioned by international community that the depressed people were provided with different kinds and also initial needs which were necessary for their daily life.
Okay, Hamid Ghulamzadeh, what options did the Islamic Revolution actually give when it came to the area of governance and the economy?
And when the Islamic Revolution happened, it was actually the time that the world was bipolar and we had an Eastern bloc and a Western bloc. And what Iran proposed in its revolution was a third narrative about being independent from both the Eastern bloc or the Western bloc. And it was aimed at introducing a new approach to governing society, which was based on Islam. this was against the interests of those powers in the world, and it was important to understand that what was the situation in Iran at that time. During the monarchy, during the Pahlavi, which was actually controlled and supported by the Americans, especially during the Cold War, in which they were trying to use the Pahlavi regime to stand against the Soviets in north of Iran. During that time, all the facilities, all the services, all the wealth belonged to the elite, a very small portion of the society which was connected to the royal family. The rest of the country were in total trouble. It included not only the villages or the rural areas, but also in urban areas. In a city like Tehran, which was and is the capital city of Iran, people didn't have even access to clean water.
It's time now for our Info News section of the program, where we bring you economic news from around the world. At least we try to cover economic news from where you are. First item, world economic collapse. That is what famed writer and economist Robert Kiyosaki has predicted. He has said that governments spending 16% of global GDP on the COVID pandemic and massive money printing, well, those are factors that will lead to this collapse, and that the U.S. dollar will actually become worthless as a result. Moving on to our next item, U.S. empire collapse. Yes, while we're on predictions, and this economist has predicted the rise of China that will result in the U.S. empire collapse. Ray Dalio, his name, the founder of the world's largest hedge fund firm, Bridgewater Associates, has compared political risks in the U.S. with recent economic growth in China, and says that eventually will lead to the U.S. empire collapse. Our next item, the UAE economy, it's taking a hit for its participation in the Yemen war. After the second most recent round of missile attacks by the Yemeni army, of which there has been another since the recording of this program, or since we wrote this program, the stock market in Dubai fell 2%, which is its largest in 1 month. Meanwhile, the U.S. has issued warnings against travel to the UAE. So we can see how the UAE's participation in the war in Yemen is resulting in that economy taking a hit. And our final piece of news concerns India's economy. This headline got our attention. 200 million jobs missing from the Indian economy, and the budget must address this crisis. Well, it turns out that there's a $200 billion COVID-19-related budget shortfall, and that India can fill that gap, but it needs to either bring back 200 million jobs or it needs to create that many, because it has lost almost that amount, if not that amount. So a big task ahead for the economy and the government there.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
It's time now for our in-depth section. There is no doubt that Iran's Islamic Revolution was a product of standing up to the inequality that persisted between the average Iranian and the opulence and wealth of the regime of the Pahlavi dynasty. But has the Islamic Republic been able to revolutionize its economy as well? Well, here's a comparative look at some sectors before and after the revolution. The GDP is what we're going to take a look at first, since that gives an overall assessment of Iran's economy. Now, we looked at the years 1977 and then the years 2017 for the comparative look, as we have said. And as evidence, there's quite a considerable increase from the year before the revolution up to the year 2017, $80.6 billion 1977, $454 billion for the year 2017. Now, this one was hard to understand due to the fact, this next piece, due to the fact that Iran has experienced more economic terrorism from the West than before the revolution, when the country was under the control of the West, in particular the U.S., but this is the inflation rate that was recorded. Now, for the year 1977, then the year 2017 is what we looked at, and what we're seeing here is 27.3%, then 10.5%, practically in half. Currently, with the 13 Iranian administration, the inflation rate has come in at under 40%, but obviously that is something that is being worked on. Now, up next, perhaps one of the prides and joy of the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic Republic are the strides that were made in the education sector, in particular the literacy rate for adults. The years 1977 and 2014 is what we looked at. The literacy rate has been one of the contributing factors behind the success of the revolution, with advancements made in a variety of fields. And here, 36.5% for 1977, then 84.7% for the year 2014. Quite an increase, as you can see. Okay, now we're going to take a look at poverty. Poverty in Iran before the revolution was quite a bit in terms of not only urban areas but also rural areas. Successive governments were aware that it needed to spread the wealth, like to the villages. The poverty rate registered in 2014 was indicative of their attention paying off, even though that rate has increased over the last few years. We're looking at 46% for 1977, then 10.5% for 2014, so quite a decrease. Of course, now that figure could be higher with the arrival of COVID-19 for the past few years, to have maybe increased poverty in Iran. Now, another feat that deserves applaud is in a sector by the name of the health sector. Health sector in Iran is one of the sectors that Iran can be proud of. This particular subcategory, the infant mortality was recorded, deaths per 1,000 live births. Now, what a difference 1977 registering 93.3 deaths, and then 2017, only 12.8. So you can see the difference there. And this is one of the things that the National Health Insurance perhaps has done to make sure that that number has decreased to the point that it has. And then finally, along the same lines comes life expectancy, which again, pre-revolution is much lower than after the revolution. And in this case, again, 1977, then 2016, the life expectancy has risen dramatically. And this, I have to point out, is the fruits of a national health insurance. 1977 coming in at 55.8 years, and then for the year 2016, 76 years. And that number could actually be higher since we're in the year 2022. Let's get some sense out of all this, and let me have Dr. Ali Rizvanpour rejoin us for this segment. Dr. Rizvanpour, the 1979 Islamic Revolution obviously was something that Iran is very proud of, but in particular we would like to zoom in on Iran's manufacturing. Iran is in a region where many of the countries bring in their products, imported from the West, in particular the U.S., but that is not the case with Iran. How do you think Iran reached that point? I mean, how critical was this for the advancement of the country overall?
Yes, it's a very good question regarding, Middle Eastern countries, mainly Persian Gulf littoral states, which possess about 10 or 15% of the world's proven oil and natural gas reserves, okay? And also, as you mentioned in your question, Persian Gulf littoral states are completely dependent to the United States and Western countries. They are monarchies, which littoral states are also related and integrated with the Western countries because they do not have any industry, they do not have any production, they do not have any, facilities in order to show that they produce something. They just sell oil and gas and get, petrodollars. And by just getting petrodollars, they try to be a consumer rather than a producer. So it will affect their...
Okay, Hamid Ghulamzadeh rejoins us. Hamid, what options did the Islamic Revolution have when it came to the governance and the economy? How did it do in that regard? What was different about it?
By domesticizing such things and making those sciences indigenous, Iran has actually tried and is becoming successful in nullifying the sanctions and its impact on actually the Iranian economy. So it is not something that the Americans would like, and they would stand against that. But the point is that so far, for reviewing for more than 40 years since the revolution, you can find out that Iran has proved that how unpowerful the Americans are. Actually, Iranians have shown the paper tiger that the America is, and it is not able to stand against Iran. If they could attack Iran, they wouldn't hesitate even a single moment to do that. But the point is that they are incapable of that.
Iran has achieved major breakthroughs in different scientific and high-tech sectors. Its various scientific institutions and universities have managed to explore areas which were exclusive domains of Western countries. One of them is space technology. Late last year, Iran launched a rocket with a satellite carrier bearing three research devices into space. Over the past decade, Iran has sent several short-lived satellites into orbit.
For the first time, we have had the 500-second performance of the second phase engine in space and in vacuum. The Seymour satellite carrier increases our payload weight that can be launched approximately from 50 kilograms to 250 kilograms and doubles our height that can be reached from 250 kilometers to 500 kilometers. And compared to previous generations, this is a great achievement.
In 2013, it launched a monkey into space. Iran has also managed to make scientific achievements in civilian nuclear technology. Western countries, led by the U.S., have tried to make Iran's nuclear program controversial. They've accused Iran of seeking nuclear weapons. But the fact is that Iran's peaceful civilian nuclear program has been devised to fulfill much-needed energy needs. Iran has said that it wants to build a network of nuclear power plants with a capacity of 20,000 megawatts to enable it to export more of its bountiful oil and gas. The technology is also used in the field of medicine to cure different types of ailments like cancer. Iran has also made significant breakthroughs in the field of medicine. Iran is now a leading country in the production of COVID vaccines.
Within the past few years, very good things have been achieved in the domain of vaccine production in the country. This year, we have several corona vaccines to be mass-produced. This vial production line is a very important infrastructure for other companies that are developing the vaccine.
When the pandemic started back in 2019, several Iranian research teams and institutions started research to develop the vaccine. Iran is among a few West Asian countries capable of developing and producing vaccines. The Islamic Republic has developed several vaccines against COVID-19, including the Coviran Barakat, Razi-Cov Pars, Nura, and Fakhra.
When it comes to marking the Islamic Revolution's birth, it's noteworthy that it was not just a political revolution, but also one in which Iran's economic roots were revolutionized. In terms of the significance of the Islamic Revolution, it has stood up to imperialism and colonialism. It was a national movement which maintained political independence and sovereignty. But
how do you create a movement that is self-reliant with the aim of maintaining its hard-won independence and sovereignty? This may have occurred in 2005. It became known as the Vision 2025. The government realized that it needed to move from a resource-based economy to one based on knowledge. This meant that it wanted to focus on human capital to create wealth. So, you have the Vision 2025 on the one hand, and then came another push to strengthen Iran's shock to external factors. It was called the resistance economy. In February 2014, Iran's leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei introduced what he called the economy of resistance. This was an economic plan promoting innovation. The resistance economy doctrine was to make the Iranian economy resistant to all external economic shocks. This included Western sanctions and global financial crises. It also set out an agenda to diversify Iran's oil-reliant economy. Iran now produces a wide range of manufactured goods like automobiles, electric appliances, telecommunication equipment, industrial machinery, paper, rubber products, steel, food products, wooden leather products, textiles, and pharmaceuticals. This graph clearly shows the way that sanctions affected the Iranian economy. When Obama tightened sanctions on Iran and when Trump withdrew from the nuclear deal and reinstated sanctions, Iran knew way back from 2005 the effects of the West push for regime change through economic strangulation, in which its best tool was sanctions. So, let's be clear about one thing. Iran's leader just recently said sanctions should not be tied to Iran's economy. The leader cited the example of economic enterprises that have not tied their operations to the removal of sanctions, adding, "Iran's economy should not be contingent on issues over which officials have no control." And that's the end of this segment of Economic Divide about the Islamic Revolution anniversary.
It was a revolution that has been praised, and at the same time, it's called one of courage. The Arab Spring or Islamic Awakening revolutions, you remember them? They swept the Arab world. Well, they were inspired by this revolution. Many have said that. And at the heart of all the uprisings lied one huge incentive to make people rise up against establishments. Well, Iran has proven that it cannot only withstand U.S. economic terrorism against it, but that it can break away from the Western-dominated economic and financial system and then create its own wealth. The Islamic Revolution brought that for Iran. That does it for this edition of the program. For me, Kaveh Tahweh, it's goodbye until next time.
The very first revolution that started with the people, continued with the people, did not change its word, did not change its way, did not decrease or increase its goals, is the Islamic Revolution of Iran. Ayatollah Khamenei.